In the depths of the Batcave, Alfred was busy bandaging Bruce as Dick paced. "What the hell do you think you were doing?"
"I'm going to be your partner."
Bruce shook his head. "There's no way." But it was Dick, not Bruce, who was dealing from strength.
"Whenever the call comes," he said, "I'll know. Whenever you go out at night, I'll be watching, and wherever there's a Batman, I'll be right behind him. How are you going to stop me?"
Bruce held his gaze, and there was something very flat and very dangerous in his eyes. "I can stop you." Dick realized that he had stepped over the line. Feeling embarrassed for having done so, he turned his back and stormed out of the Batcave. Bruce shook his head, discouraged. He owed this kid his life, and he knew he couldn't keep doing it alone. But did that mean that he should bring in a partner? Or did it mean that he should stop? Bruce glanced over at a TV screen which was playing the news. He turned up the volume and heard, "Batman is a magnet for so-called supervillains. Only when Batman hangs up cape and cowl will Gotham be spared these evildoers' violent vendettas." Bruce Wayne started to laugh.
"Alfred, why do I keep doing this?"
Alfred reached over and put a hand on Bruce's shoulder.
"Your parents are avenged. The Wayne Foundation contributes a fortune to anti-crime programs. Police handle much of the villainy. Why, indeed?"
"If I quit, would Two-Face and his crusade? Could I leave the shadows? To spare Dick? To have a life? Friends? Family?"
"Dr. Meridian."
Bruce looked up, pain in his eyes.
"Alfred, she loves Batman, not Bruce Wayne."
"Go tell her. Tell her how you feel."
Pale moonlight shined through the window of Chase Meridian's bedroom. She lay asleep, chest rising and falling evenly. A shadow crossed her face. The French doors to her bedroom opened. A tall and, to some, frightening apparition stood framed against the window. A shadow crossed her face, causing her to stir slightly. Then her eyes opened in narrow slits, dream and reality blending seamlessly. She rose slowly from the bed, moonlight playing along her diaphanous gown. She went to him, cape whipping around her.
"It's 2 a.m., she whispered. "I'd given up on you."
His mouth came close to hers, so close, and then their lips met. They broke, and she laughed.
"I'm sorry,"
Chase said. "It's just, I can't believe it. I've imagined this moment ever since I first saw you, and now I have you, and—" She turned away from him, walking across the room into the living room. He followed noiselessly. She pushed the roll-top desk, turned on the desk lamp.
"I've met someone. He's not you, but—"
She stopped.
"I hope you can understand."
All of the Batman memorabilia on the desk had been replaced by photos and articles about Bruce Wayne. She cleared her throat.
"He came to me for advice. I suppose we were in a sort of gray area. I don't want to be in gray areas with him. I want to move into the light. Do you understand?"
Batman never uttered a word. He merely bowed slightly, moved backward and out. He stood in front of a window and seemed to recede out of it. She watched until he was out of sight. When she spoke, her voice was slow and trembling.
"I figured it out, of course. But I've been mean-spirited and self-centered and so horrible to him. He needed me."
She slammed her fist against the desk.
"He needed to be loved for himself. He needed me. And I was playing head games with him. What the hell kind of doctor am I? What kind of human being am I, for God's sake?"
And then the sobs came stronger, and she made no effort to stop it.
"Thank God he came as Batman, so I could speak to the mask instead of to Bruce. Maybe he'll believe. Maybe—"
She paused and drew in a slow breath.
"Maybe now we can start talking to each other, instead of at each other."
Batman watched Chase Meridian's apartment until the light went out. Then, via his rope, he descended to the waiting Batmobile. He climbed into the cockpit and touched the communications unit. Despite the lateness of the hour, Alfred answered immediately.
"How did it go, sir?"
Under his cowl, he smiled. "Exactly as I thought it would. She figured it out."
"Well, sir," said Alfred politely, "then it would seem the two of you are well matched."
As Nigma sat on his throne-like seat on Claw Island, Two-Face entered and yanked the device from Edward's head. "Our belfry is finally free of bats," he claimed. In response, Nigma shoved a newspaper under Two-Face's faces. The report described how Batman emerged from a manhole, accompanied by another individual also wearing a cape and mask.
"Not only isn't he dead," observed the Riddler, "but he seems to be multiplying."
"The man's refusal to die is really annoying," bellowed Two-Face. Then he pulled his gun. "Someone is going to die today."
The Riddler stepped back, looked chagrined.
"You want to kill me, Harv? Well, all right, go ahead. Too bad about Batman."
"What about Batman?" Two-Face asked suspiciously.
"What?" the Riddler asked. "If you could know a man's mind, would you not then own that man?"
He hit a switch, and suddenly every screen was filled with images of Bruce Wayne stepping into the booth at the party.
"Would you like to see what my old friend Bruce has in his head?"
He hit another switch, and something huge and frightening ripped free from the landscape of the schematic brain that had appeared on the screen. A trapped bat, fierce and monstrous.
"Riddle me this," asked the Riddler. "What kind of man has bats on the brain?"
The two of them began to laugh, loud and long. Dick Grayson was positive it was a trick. In the Batcave, Bruce was going from one device to the next, shutting them down.
"You can't quit," said Dick. There are monsters out there."
"Dick, I've spent my life protecting people I've never met, faces I'll never see. If I let you lose yourself to a life of revenge, all I've lived for will have been for nothing. Batman has to vanish so you can live. Maybe so we all can."
"You can't decide what I'm going to do with my life."
"You have to let this go. Trust me, I'm your friend."
"I don't need a friend," Dick said, temper flaring. "I need a partner. Two-Face has to pay."
Bruce sighed. "Chase is coming to dinner. Come upstairs. We'll talk." Bruce almost reached out for him, but when Dick flinched, he withdrew the hand. Instead, he headed up to the house, leaving Dick alone in the dark, still cave. Dick stood there for a moment. Then he walked slowly to the costume vault. He looked over the array of Batman costumes until he came to a standing figure separate from the rest, his Robin costume.
"The hell with you. I'll do it myself," he said.
Half an hour later, carrying everything that he cared about, Dick Grayson rode down the steep mountain road. Far above him, the lights of Wayne Manor twinkled in the night. Seated in front of the fireplace in the living room, Bruce and Chase nursed glasses of vintage champagne. "I asked you to come tonight because I need to tell you something," Bruce began.
"I want to tell you something, too."
They hesitated, stopped, then laughed lightly.
"You go first," said Bruce.
"Right," she nodded gamely. "Bruce, all my life I've been attracted to a certain kind of man. The wrong kind of man. But since I met you..."
Her voice trailed off.
"God, why am I so nervous?"
She reached for her wine glass and bumped the vase. Two of the roses fell to the floor.
The roses, lying there, and they were wilting before his eyes.
She could tell instantly that he was gone again, gone into his past. "Bruce, what's wrong?"
"It's happening again. Flashes. Images of my parents' death."
"Your memories are trying to break through. Let them come."
I'm not sure I want to remember."
"Bruce."
And she took a giant step in the direction of what she wanted to tell him.
"You braved those thugs at the circus. Braved your parents' death. you can brave the past. He leaned back slightly, closing his eyes. There's a book on my father's desk. I'm opening the book, reading. I'm running out into the storm, the book in my hands. Can't hear my screams over the rain. I'm falling into a hole. Okay. What did the book say?
October 31st. The last entry. The night they died. Bruce insists on seeing a movie tonight.
Oh, I made them go out. I made them take me to the movie. The theater. That alley. It was my fault. I killed them. After I read it, I grabbed the book and ran. I tripped, fell into a sinkhole. Thought it was the bat that scared me that night, but it wasn't. This is the demon I've spent my life fighting. My own guilt. The fear that I killed them.
Oh, God, Bruce, you were a child. You weren't responsible.
And it was at that moment that all hell broke loose. Alfred opened the door in answer to the ring and never even saw the cane descending toward him. The thugs stepped over him, two of them picking up his unconscious form and shoving him in a closet. Two-Face snapped his fingers. "Move!" he said. His thugs started off in all directions. The Riddler headed off through the mansion. Bruce headed into the dining alcove, Chase right behind him, as he heard the commotion. He ran straight into two of Two-Face's thugs. Quickly, he grabbed a silver serving tray, flipped it into one of the thug's faces, and kicked him in the stomach. Without breaking motion, he slammed the platter into the other thug's head. Then he grabbed Chase's hand, and they dashed out the door, several more henchmen in close pursuit. The Riddler moved slowly through the mansion, holding up his cane in this direction and that, checking the sounding signals being issued from the head. He was looking for a wall with a hidden panel, something that appeared to be solid but had a drop behind it, and in short order he found it. The Batcave was dark with drop cloths over the equipment. He started removing small green bombs from his pouch. The green bombs he had produced were in the shape of bats. With demented glee, he twisted each of their little heads, enjoying every single screech. He picked up the first one, its wings flapping furiously, and hurled it into the air. The bat struck the video wall, and a tremendous explosion rocked it. The next one blew the costume vault to hell and gone, and the third detonated in the crime lab. And as he headed out of the cave, the Riddler shouted to any stray bats who might be listening, "Tell the fat lady she's on in 5!" And the moment he was clear of it, the Batmobile exploded. Within seconds, it became a huge, flaming slab of metal. Within the closet into which he'd been tossed, Alfred tried the doorknob. Locked. Undeterred, he activated his wrist-com device.
911,
he said, and the autodialer went to work. Bruce and Chase fled up the giant staircase, the thugs one step behind, and Two-Face approached the bottom of the stairs, flipping the coin. "A chance to live, a chance to die," he intoned. "Lady Luck makes her decrees, and we can do naught but slavishly follow." The scarred side of the coin winked up at him. "Finally," he said, pulled out his gun, aimed, and fired. At the top of the stairs, the bullet grazed Bruce Wayne's head. Chase shrieked as Bruce pitched back and tumbled the length of the stairs to the bottom. An instant later, several thugs had closed in behind Chase and had her arms pinned. Bruce lay unmoving on the floor. Two-Face stood over him and said,
"Bruce, my boy, you sure know how to throw a party."
The Riddler came dashing in at that moment. In the distance, police sirens could be heard.
"Okay," he nodded towards Chase. "Just grab the bait."
Chase was dragged out. The Riddler grinned as he walked over to the unconscious Bruce and dropped a riddle on top of his body before sauntering out the door. And somewhere far below, as fire licked through the costume vault, the bat emblems began to burn. And from out of the fire, a huge bat appeared. It staggered, enveloped in flame, its red eyes blazing, and then fell forward and moved no further.
"The injuries are relatively minor," said the doctor. "The shot did cause a concussion. Watch for headaches, memory lapses, odd behavior. I'll check back in a few days."
the doctor finished packing up. Alfred led the physician out, then quickly returned to Bruce's bedside.
How are you feeling, young man?
Well enough. Give me the bad news. He'd rather not have gotten into it so quickly, but it was unavoidable. Alfred said,
Master Dick has run away. They have taken Dr. Meridian, and...
There was no delicate way to say it.
I'm afraid they found the cave, sir. It's been destroyed.
Bruce looked up at Alfred with puzzled, narrowed eyes.
The cave? What cave?
Bruce stared in wonderment at the cave, or what was left of it. There were melted ruins and rubble as far as he could see. Alfred stood silently next to him.
I remember my life as Bruce Wayne, but all this, it's like the life of a stranger.
Then he paused.
There's one other thing I feel. Afraid.
It started to tumble back to him.
The cave. I remember the cave. A demon. Oh, my God. Alfred.
No demons, son.
Alfred touched the side of Bruce's head.
Your monsters are here. And until you face them, I fear you will spend your life fleeing them.
Bruce stood in front of the dark, rocky mouth that led to the smaller part of the cave, the part that he'd first fallen into those many years ago. He insinuated his body through and climbed slowly up into it.
Bats. Bats everywhere. Just as he remembered, making the walls and ceiling look as if they were throbbing with life themselves.
The infrared goggles were fitted over his face, the cave looking like daylight. He spotted it in far less time than he would have thought. It was there, under an alcove, a large piece of rock that extended and covered it, as if protecting it against the possibility of his eventual return. Slowly, terrified of what he would find, he reached for the book. He turned the pages to the last entry, and there it was, just as he remembered.
Bruce insists on seeing a movie tonight.
He paused, and then noticed that the page was stuck back to back with the next one. Moisture had done it. Carefully, he separated the pages and turned them, and found more writing. But Martha and I have our hearts set on Zorro, so Bruce's cartoon will have to wait until next week.
He stared at the book in disbelief. Not my fault, he whispered. It wasn't my fault.
Suddenly, in the dark ahead of him, a shape moved. It separated itself from the rest of the shadows, but with his goggles, clear as day, he could see it. Even in day, it was terrifying. Mouth open, to reveal hideous fangs, head moving slowly from side to side, and watching him through red slits, wings huge. And suddenly, the monstrosity was airborne, and it was coming for him. He turned, resolved to meet the thing head on, and then something remarkable happened. The bat held its position, staring straight into his eyes, wings spread wide, and Bruce raised his arms to match the aspect of the bat. They faced each other, living mirrors, man and bat, neither entirely sure how much of the other was real. And in the unreality of the cave, they came together. Bats exploded from on high. In the main chamber of the Batcave, Alfred reflexively put up his arm to ward them off. They arced all over the ceiling, smashing into each other as if they couldn't move quickly enough. He watched in stupefaction. And then a shadow was cast down at him. He looked up and whispered,
"Master Bruce?"
A voice spoke to him, familiar and yet unfamiliar. And it said,
"Batman, Alfred. I'm Batman."
In Bruce Wayne's bedroom, Bruce and Alfred stood over the latest riddle.
"Five little items of an everyday sort. You'll find them all in a tennis court."
Bruce picked up a pen and started circling letters in the words.
"A tennis court."
Alfred saw it immediately.
vowels.
He turned to the many riddles that the Riddler had left, either with Bruce Wayne or at various locations during his crime spree. But what do a clock, a match, chess pawns, and vowels have in common? Bruce asked. And then something clicked. Every riddle has a number in the question.
But what do they mean?
What does every maniac want? Bruce asked, and answered his own question. Recognition. And he started arranging and rearranging the numbers. 13, 1, 8, and 5. Letters in the alphabet, he said suddenly. 13 is M. M-R-E. M-R-E? Mr. E?
Mystery?
And another name for mystery? Conundrum? Puzzle? Enigma. Mr. E. Mr. Edward Nigma. They moved through the charred remains of the Batcave, trying to determine what options they had left to them. The small comfort we can take, Alfred, he said, pushing a button on the platform on which the Batmobile's charred frame sat, is that Mr. E. didn't know about the cave under the cave. The platform started downward, slowly descending into the subterranean depths where decades before young Bruce Wayne had heard water running.
What now, sir?
Claw Island, Nigma's headquarters. I'm sure that's where they're keeping Chase. He paused and said, Are all the bat suits destroyed?
All except the prototype, but we haven't had a successful test yet.
Bruce smiled. You know what, Alfred? I'm feeling lucky tonight. The young man stood in the cave, looking around at the wreckage. His black cape was draped around him as he surveyed the wreckage. He was wearing a red armored vest, green tights, and knee armor. A utility belt was buckled around his middle, and he wore flexible black boots. A small R decorated his chest plate, and a mask covered his features. So, this is why he hasn't answered the signal, he said. He felt dread creeping through him. Then he noticed the platform for the Batmobile was gone entirely. He walked over to it and looked down, and he heard voices from below echoing up to him. He unsnapped a grappling hook and length of cable from his utility belt, anchored it firmly, and then jumped down into the darkness. Batman emerged from the shadows, his armor bulkier, his cowl more fearsome-looking. Alfred stared at him. He certainly looked more intimidating. What do you suggest, Alfred? By sea or by air? Why not both? But the response had not been from Alfred. They turned to see the red and green clad form of Dick Grayson drop down a few feet away. The two costumed individuals studied each other. Dick, where did you get that suit? He asked finally. It was Alfred who said,
I took the liberty, sir.
What's the R stand for?
Robin. He hesitated. I thought you could use some help.
Two against two are better odds, Batman allowed. But your attitude
has changed, Robin put in. Whatever happens, I won't kill him. A friend taught me that.
Not just a friend, Bruce extended his hand. A partner. The walk up to the rooftop of police headquarters had been the longest Gordon had ever made. He stood next to Detective Bullock, the policeman on watch, and tapped the signal. He's not coming. Shut it down. Bullock reached for the switch, and suddenly a roar cut through the night. The bat signal was coming closer. The great black shape grew closer and closer, and then all of a sudden the bat wing burst through it, buzzing police headquarters and dipping a wing to Gordon. A triumphant Gordon saluted as the Batwing arced up and in the direction of Gotham Harbor. And in the waters of the harbor itself, Robin steered the Batboat across the still waters. Claw Island loomed before him. Atop Claw Island, searchlights popped on one by one, flooding the water with light. Within, The Riddler and Two-Face were playing electronic battleship. The Riddler studied the board.
A-14.
Hit!
Mortars exploded from the top of Claw Island, angling down toward the batboat. Robin cut the ship hard to starboard, and water spouted high in the sky behind him. Another explosion to stern. They were getting his range, and Robin knew that he was in serious trouble. Then the water in front of him erupted in a mountainous geyser, and Robin was blown back out of the batboat. A mortar struck the batboat square amidships and blew it to bits.
"A hit!" said Two-Face, looking disappointed. "You sank our battleship!"
Beneath the waters of Gotham City, Robin shoved a rebreather into his mouth and started to swim towards Claw Island. A stream of armed frogmen started converging on him from all sides, and he twisted frantically out of the way as a spear shot past him, leaving a tiny trail of bubbles behind him. Robin figured that maybe he had one more good dodge in him before he got shish kebabbed. Then he looked up as the roar of an engine alerted him to the presence of the Batwing. The air vessel angled down toward Robin, and he allowed himself some measure of hope. Then laser beams from the top of Riddler's stronghold blasted outward, neatly severing one of the plane's wings. The plane spiraled downward, crashing into the water and sinking without a trace. And that was when the frogmen caught up with Robin. They dragged him under, the water swallowing him, and he struggled furiously, lashing out with his hands, kicking desperately. Robin twisted, ripped the mask off one of the frogmen, yanked the breathing tube out of another's mouth. But more converged on him, grabbing his arms and legs, and now more were approaching with knives. Suddenly, one of the frogmen gestured frantically, and they all turned to see what he was indicating. It was impossible to miss. Speeding towards them, through the water, was the remains of the Batwing. Except that, incredibly, even miraculously, it had transformed into something else. The other wing had telescoped inward, and sleek fins had now slid into place. The Bat-Sub, for want of another name, approached at top speed to aid the beleaguered team. With a roar and rush of water, a black torpedo streaked towards them, shot out of the Bat-Sub. A torpedo with arms. That's what one of the frogmen judged it to be, as a capeless Batman shot past him, snagged the struggling Robin with one hand, and with the other released a large net. The guided net ensnared the frogmen. They tried to slice it open with their knives, but didn't even come close to cutting through it. Batman and Robin shot straight toward the surface. When they broke the water, Robin gasped for air, and moments later clambered up to the rocky shore of Claw Island. Batman came up several yards behind. As he did so, he heard Robin exclaim, "Holy rusted metal, Batman!"
"What?"
Robin took a few steps forward, kneeling. "The ground. It's metal, and it's full of holes. You know, holy."
"Oh." He looked around. "This place was a refueling station for subs during the war."
Just as Batman started to climb out of the water, he heard a grinding of motors and a horrible crunching noise. He looked upward as Robin started to rise into the air. The island was situated atop a tremendous cylindrical oil tank, rising quickly out of the water. Batman was left behind on a necklace of jutting rocks as Robin, with the rest of Claw Island, ascended higher and faster. It was already higher than Batman's wire-poon gun could shoot a grappling hook. Looking around desperately for some means of access, he spotted a rusted panel on the giant metal structure. He moved quickly to it, ripped it free, and climbed inside. Robin looked down at the water surging far below him. That was when a silky voice said,
"The circus boy, right?"
He spun and stared straight at Two-Face. Robin leaped at him. Two-Face sidestepped and landed on top of him, slamming him viciously in the head. He raised his blade over the dazed Robin and brought it down fast. At the last second, Robin rolled clear. He backflipped, kicking Two-Face hard in the head. "For my mother!" he shouted. As Two-Face staggered, Robin kicked him again and again. "For my father! For Chris!" He knocked Two-Face to his knees and said tightly, "For me!" He smashed Two-Face in the chin, sending him rolling down the slope. At the last second, Two-Face grabbed a jagged outcropping of rock on the island's edge, hanging on for dear life, feet kicking wildly over the abyss.
"See you in hell!"
Two-Face spat. Then the rock he was clutching began to slide, and Two-Face started to fall. He made it 2 feet, and then Robin's hand grabbed him. "No," he said. "I'd rather see you in jail." And with that, he hauled Two-Face to safety. And suddenly, There was a gun in Two-Face's hand. It was pressed against the flesh between Robin's eyes.
"A mistake," said Two-Face, and he cocked the trigger.
The interior of the cylinder was a world of spinning, glowing question marks. A series of steel gratings at intervals of 100 feet rose the height of the cylinder. Each grating had a trap door through which Batman could gain entry. But now the grating on which he was standing was being sealed beneath him electronically, and suddenly the upper grating began moving down toward him. It left him only one option. He thumbed a button on his utility belt, painfully aware that the last time he'd tested the device, he'd almost set himself on fire. His costume vibrated. The thrusters hurled him upwards towards the descending grate. The descending grating and ascending Batman collided, Batman smashing through it. The metal wrenched free of the cylinder sides, clattering downwards. He hung there for a moment, then he hoisted himself upward, shoved his way through a rusting access hatch to face a weird haircut that belonged to the Riddler. He was seated on his throne, which was slowly rotating. Extending from the back of his throne was a huge antenna stretching up into the night sky. A ring of light encircled him, feeding even more brain power into him.
"No more tricks, Edward," said Batman. "Release Chase. This is between you and me."
Two-Face stepped from behind the Riddler's throne.
"And me. And me."
In the control room, Batman saw screens with schematics of flickering brains.
"You've been sucking Gotham's brainwaves. You've devised a way to map the human brain," he said, "to read men's minds."
The Riddler's voice started to rise, becoming louder, more demented.
"No secret is safe from my watchful electronic eye," he said. "I will rule the planet. Edward Nygma has become a god."
His voice echoed throughout the room. He waited until the reverberations had stopped, and then he turned to Batman.
"By the way, B-Man, I've got your number. I've seen your mind, freak."
The Riddler now stood to his feet and released the drapes to one of the two curtain-draped cylinders suspended overhead. The curtain rose to reveal Chase within the tube, bound and unconscious.
"The captivating Dr. Chase Meridian. She enjoys hiking, getting her nails done, and foolishly hopes to be the love of your civilian life."
Batman knew, even before the rising curtain displayed it, that within the other tube would be
"Batman's one and only partner," said the Riddler.
He pressed a button to reveal the waiting trap doors that slid open beneath Chase and Robin's cylinders. Then he pointed to a button on the armrest of his chair.
"A simple touch, and 5 seconds later, these two players are gull-feed on the rocks below," he said. "So, who will it be, your love or your partner?"
"Edward, you've become a monster."
"I'm sorry," said the Riddler. "Your answer must be in the form of a question."
And his finger went towards the button. Batman started walking toward the two cylinders. He heard a soft chuckle from Two-Face and froze. He studied the floor carefully, closed his eyes, and felt a gentle breeze wafting from in front of him.
"Wait, I have a riddle for you," Batman said.
"For me? Really? Tell me."
"I see without feeling. To me, darkness is as clear as daylight. Who am I?"
"Oh, please! You're as blind as a bat."
"Exactly."
Batman slammed his utility belt, released a batarang with a high-energy charge, and hurled it at the antenna. The batarang smashed into the antenna, and a massive charge of electrons fed into the transceiver, overloading them.
"No!"
screamed the Riddler, as he was bombarded with massive pulses of neural energy. His entire head started to distort, fluctuate in size, and waver, and then he collapsed, slumping against the button. And Robin and Chase Meridian fell through their cylinders, the drop yawning before them. But the tubes hadn't opened simultaneously. They'd opened sequentially, no more than a second between the two. But it might be all Batman needed. In that instant, two metal lids shut over Batman's eyes. Small radar screens appeared on the back of Batman's eyepiece.
as he had thought, there was no floor in front of him, only a fake holographic representation of one, and the wild crisscross of interconnected steel beams between the Riddler's lair and the crashing ocean below. Batman leaped forward and hurled the Batarang all in the same motion. As the Batarang cable snapped taut, he swung down and caught Chase in an arc, depositing her on a steel beam before preparing to leap after Robin. He looked down. No sign. "Robin! What you want?" He looked up, his radar zeroing in. Robin was wedged in the bottom of the tube, his arms and legs pushing against either side. He started to climb the girder toward Robin when Two-Face appeared on the beam in front of him. He had a halogen light strapped to his head, blinding Batman's sensors. He brandished his gun.
All those heroics for nothing! No more curtains, one and two. Just plain curtains!
"Haven't you forgotten something, Harvey?" called out Batman. "You're always of two minds about everything." To Two-Face's chagrin, he realized that Batman was right. He took out his coin and flipped it, and Batman threw a batarang. The batarang clipped the coin and sent it off its arc, and Harvey lunged for it. He snatched it out of midair, still clutching his gun, and then he fell. 2 yards. Then Two-Face slammed against one of the lower girders, and now he twisted himself around, bracing his feet, clinging tenaciously, like a bat. Robin shouted down, "You go round acting like that coin is making all the decisions, but it's not the coin, it's you. You're so damned gutless, I feel sorry for you." With a snarl, Two-Face brought his gun up and aimed it at Robin. Robin pressed on relentlessly. "You don't have the guts to admit Batman was human and couldn't do everything. You don't have the guts to admit you might have been at all responsible. What's that coin say about you, hotshot? Go on, do it! Decide for yourself about yourself, you pathetic bastard!" Two-Face stared up at him for an eternity as the water crashed below. Then he flipped the coin. It spun, hanging there in the night, and then descended. Two-Face plucked it out of the air, looked at it. He shook his head, and then he released his hold on the girder. He made no sound as he descended. None at all. There was dead silence.
"Ah, I didn't want to do that," said Robin slowly. I killed him."
"No. You just showed Two-Face his real face. The rest was his decision. Maybe his first genuine decision in years." A lonely figure, Edward Nigma stood trying to piece together the charred fragments of his machinery. His voice was small, lost.
Why can't I kill you? Too many questions. Why you and not me? Why me? Why?
His scalp was blistered and burned. Pathetic, whimpering, and mad, he stared at the pieces of his machinery as they crumbled in his hand. Batman reached down for the Riddler, who turned and looked up at him and shrieked, for descending towards him was the ravenous face of a hideous, demonic, giant bat. Surprisingly, it was a quiet night at Arkham Asylum, except for the screaming of one inmate. Dr. Burton, the chief psychiatrist, walked down the hallways of the maximum security wing, Chase Meridian at his side.
"Edward Nigma has been screaming for hours that he knows the true identity of Batman," Burton informed her.
"Really?" said Chase, her voice neutral. They reached cell 22, and Chase peered in.
"Edward, it's Dr. Chase Meridian. Do you remember me?"
"How could I forget?"
"Dr. Burton tells me you know who Batman is."
Edward giggled gleefully.
"Yes, I know."
"Edward, who is Batman?"
Suddenly, a huge silhouette of a bat appeared on the cell of the padded wall. Into it leaped Edward, the sleeves of his straitjacket madly flapping like the wings of a bat.
man!
Doctors Burton and Meridian walked quickly away, the howls and cackles of Edward's demented glee ringing behind them. Chase emerged from Arkham Asylum to find Bruce waiting with the Bentley, holding the rear door open. "He's lost all contact with reality," she said. "Your secret is safe." Bruce smiled and then reached into his coat pocket and handed her a small wicker figure, the dream doll. "Thank you," he said. "I don't need it anymore. My dreams are all good dreams now." They climbed into the Bentley, pausing to kiss. The car rolled away from Arkham and down the hill. And that was when the bat signal flared in the air. "Don't work too late," said Chase. Minutes later, Chase Meridian was the sole passenger in the car, with Alfred at the wheel. She stared up at the bat signal burning against the sky. "Does it ever end, Alfred?" Alfred chuckled softly.
"No, miss. Not in this lifetime."
And high above the city, crouched on the edge of a gargoyle-lined building, Batman looked out over his city. He didn't even have to glance behind him to know that Robin was nearby. Their capes billowed in the breeze as they swung off across the skyline, twin guardians of the night. The darkness opened up to them, and they were gone.
This has been a Time Warner Audiobooks production of Batman Forever, adapted by Peter David, based on a screenplay written by Lee Batchelor, Janet Scott Batchelor, and Akiva Goldman. Read for you by Renee Auberjonois. Produced by Maya Thomas and directed by Jill Demby Guest. The Batman theme, composed by Danny Elfman, courtesy of Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation, BMI. Tape edited, mixed, and mastered by Andrew Padgett.